What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
How's it going, everybody? After Hours here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens, Chris Unocero on the other side of the glass. We're going to give you 3 hours of some fun content here. We're talking Royals, a little bit of Chiefs as well. Some college football. I don't know if you just saw, Chris, but the new, or there's a screenshot that is out for the Dynasty mode. And we're learning more about it tomorrow, but it just makes you so excited for this game.
You know, I don't need to learn anything else. The minute they announced it, I was like, you guys got my sale here.
You're in.
You don't have to sell me on anything else, because of all the sports franchises out there, aside from like FIFA, there was not a franchise that really degraded significantly. There was not a series that was able to retain its value, retain its quality, except for FIFA, other than the NCAA series. Like, it's incredibly strong as a sports video game.
Ten years too late. I mean, we finally get one back, and I'm glad that we get. We're going to talk about it a little bit later, because I know you're going to get the game. I'm getting the game. We have our tournament, by the way, a week from now, July 8th through the 12th, you'll have a chance. Just listen to 610 Sports Radio. You'll have a shot to earn a spot in our 32-team tournament. It's going to be 24 listeners against 8 of us from the station, and you get to have some bragging rights. You get a console of your choice if you win the whole thing, some K-State and Missouri tickets, and then
how many people
maybe even
do
more
you
as
think
well.
Here are actually good at it? Because I would argue there might be like maybe two or three people in the entire station that are actually good at the game.
I would say I agree with you. I wonder, with it being so long, what are the? I think that myself, I pre-ordered it, so I'll have a couple of days in advance before the tournament to get on the sticks a little bit and get used to the game. I wonder how many people are actually going to be legitimately good. We don't even know. I don't know the difficulty. I don't know.
I would assume just the base difficulty. Usually I think it's like whatever the second level of difficulty
is. Like varsity or All-American?
Yeah. Usually it's like the second level of difficulty is like the default. So I would imagine that's what it is.
I'm hoping I'll be good at it. I don't even know who I'm playing with yet. I'm trying to...
I think most people... I think the listeners will probably very quickly eliminate the people who work for 610. I think maybe there's like a couple of people from 610 that are actually probably good at the game.
C-Dot's talking smack. It sounds like
C-Dot's probably one of the two that's actually good.
C-Dot and Rob, man, I don't know how good they're going to be, but it'll be interesting to see them and how good they actually are. We're going to start things off by talking about the Royals. They proved this weekend that they can beat anybody. The 4 of 6 wins, 4 out of the 6 games that they've won, the Royals against the Guardians, proves that they are able to compete with the top tier of the AL. You've got the Guardians, you've got the Yankees, and the Orioles as well, that are more of the cream of the crop of the AL. When you've got a winning record against the Guardians, you've played well, could have a winning record against the Orioles. You know, you played the Yankees, and you learned a little bit about yourselves there. But the one thing that the Royals need to do, I think, is maintain the rest of the way. That might be the key for them, is maintain. They went 12-15 in the month of June. We talked about it a little bit earlier on Cody and Gold. And if you can go 12-15 and that's your bad month, from here on out, let's see where things go from here. Finish this road out before the All-Star break. I'll give it to you in a second. But you've got the 6 games against the White Sox the following a couple of weeks after the All-Star break, before they have their hiatus. They've got Tampa right here in KC. Then they go on the road at Colorado, at St. Louis, and then at Boston. And Boston is on the same tier as them. Tampa Bay, a little bit worse record than the boys in blue. Colorado, they stink, but you just got to get through it better than you did against the Marlins. You need to just take care of business. And then the Cardinals, obviously it's a little bit of a rivalry between the state or the cities of KC and St. Louis, but the Cardinals are right there on that tier. Combined, the record of those four teams is 157-76. You get through going into the All-Star break, Chris, with a winning record, I think, and you set yourself up well where you gain the momentum back that you had lost a little bit in the month of June. You're feeling really good about yourselves. You get that break, the well-deserved break, and then you come out hot on the other side. What, I don't know what percentage you would give for the Royals to make the playoffs right now. I think I would give it a strong 70 to 75%. I feel comfortable saying there's a really good shot they make the playoffs.
I mean, I think it's a more than 50% chance at this point, just because they kind of weathered the storm the way that I think a lot of people were concerned about. It's funny because like 6 days ago, people were freaking out after they lost to the Marlins. Vern had a terrible time with that, the post-game show. He was very angry at the people there. I remember driving in that Wednesday, listening to him, and he was kind of calling out how crazy people were being on Tuesday night. I went on with Dusty that night, and we kind of laughed about people's panic. And it's, you know, it's like, the people that have been kind of, you know, jumping off the bandwagon like they were doing that like a week ago after the terrible series against the Rangers, and then you lose to the Marlins, and like that's baseball, like good teams lose to bad teams all the time in the sport. I think at this point now, just enjoy the summer. Like, don't put any expectations on what you're watching. All we asked for at the beginning of the year was competitive baseball. Nobody was sitting here saying, make the playoffs. Nobody was like, we need you to challenge for the AL pennant. Nobody was sitting there talking about 2014, we can make a run. Everybody was just like, I just want to be able to go to games during the summer. Go to the T-shirt Tuesday. Go to the bobblehead night, and I could watch a team that's competitive against any team out there. And right now, that's what you're getting. You should be happy with that. Let's not go out here and start prognosticating playoffs and start getting our hopes up too high. Now, if we start getting to the end of this month and they're in position to potentially get a bullpen arm that gives them the kind of shot in the arm they need to go on a run in the last couple months, cool. That's great. Now we can shift expectations. But let's not shift expectations right now. I know they just beat the best team in baseball, took 3 out of 4 at home. But you look at those road splits, not very good. And correct. I think that's kind of the part that balances out what they've been doing. So let's just enjoy the ride.
30-16 at home, and then 17-23 on the road are the Kansas City Royals. Look, I mean, if they play, I think that's one of the things, too, that we, I guess, get caught up in the moment, which is a good thing, is they're right now 47-39. Like, we want the playoffs. People are expecting the playoffs. You know, people are going to be a little bit disappointed if they don't make the postseason. That I think is a good thing. But in hindsight, you got to remind yourself, as you mentioned, Chris, that look, we just wanted them to be competitive. I know on Cody and Gold, our over-unders or our win totals were 75, 76, 77. That's what we wanted. Right now, they're on pace for more than that. They're on pace to be in the 80s, close to 90. I mean, at one point, they were on pace to get over 100 wins. Right now, they look really good. They're on pace to make the playoffs. Anything I think above, if they make the playoffs, it obviously is a winning season no matter what. If they don't make it, I think it's still a little bit disappointing, but competitive baseball in the months of August and September, I think, will really be encouraging for this team that's still very young, has one of the best rotations in baseball, and people can, you know, kind of hang their hat on that. Over the weekend, the most egregious potential miss after a replay that we've seen, the home run that wasn't and shouldn't have been, but was ruled as counted anyways. I think that this is a diabolically bad instance of using something that's good, that's supposed to help, Chris, but it didn't. And I think that ultimately there's no way that you can miss that call after looking at replay. And I get that from an angle, it might've been a little bit tricky, but you see the ball go behind the pole. There's no sound. The ball had black on it from the net. Anyways, there was no mark on it. I think that was an obvious sign of, look, this was a foul ball. You can't miss it.
I replay is one of those things where, like, baseball just always seems to be behind on things like that. And it's really tough compared to, like, the NFL. Because, like, a lot of times when we're using instant replay, we're kind of seeing whether or not a receiver got 2 feet down in the field of play securing the catch. You know, we're looking to see if a runner was down before the ball popped out. Things like that that are a little bit easier to tell. But, like, unless Major League Baseball can get the kind of technology that, like, tennis has, where, you know, like, you've watched, like, tennis matches, like the majors and whatnot, and whenever the ball is near the line, let's say that one of the judges calls it out, and then the player who lost that point will challenge, they will appeal to the main judge there, and they'll go to the replay and they do the slow clap up until they get to the actual point where they reveal whether it was in or out. And, you know, like, that kind of technology is great. And you see, like, the NFL starting to ponder this stuff. Baseball is still so behind when it comes to that sort of technology, that sort of replay ability, that you're going to get stuff like this. Like, they just last year decided to allow the umpires to announce the calls to the fans. Like, think about how ass backwards we are when we've been having that in the NFL for decades. But baseball umpires just last year could now have a PA system where they could tell the fans, tell the viewers for the game what the call is, instead of them doing a hand signal and then the announcers have to tell us what's happening. Or if you're at the game, you just got to figure it out based on what happens as far as whether they reset the play or not. So it's like, baseball's so behind on a lot of this stuff. They just started allowing challenges. They don't even allow you to challenge ball and strike calls, which they're testing out right now, but it's probably going to be a slow intro into major leagues. Like, this is just going to be something that happens. This is part of the growing pains of baseball starting to get things right as far as officiating goes.
Yeah, I think that them being able to challenge the balls and the strikes will be good. The system they've had in the minor leagues has worked well. It's quick. It's simple. It's easy. Somebody brought up a point that I kind of thought about as you were making the tennis reference from the 816. They have sensors in the balls. Why can't they put them in the foul poles? Along the lines of that, just have a laser that gets sent down the baseline. Yeah. You know, something. We are in 2024. There's enough technology where it can happen. It should happen. And there's no point, no reason at all in missing those calls. We're going to talk a little baseball coming back from on the other side, as well as how important is it for Xavier Worthy, or how important is he to the overall success of the wide receiver room? We're going to talk about that next, and also new rules for the Home Run Derby, why that makes it a little bit more interesting. Again, you're listening to After Hours right here on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app, brought to you by Twin Peaks Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views.
Noticed areas inside your home that could be a sign you need a roof replacement? Then make Century Roofing your first call. We have extended our free material upgrade sale on all roof replacements. Get a Class 3 or 4 impact-resistant shingle for the same price of the standard 30-year or premium shingle. Save on your insurance premium and see why we continue to be voted best of Johnson County. Trust the pillars of strength with KC-based and female-owned Century Roofing, KC.com.
Century Roofing, trust the pillars of strength.
It's the 4th of July sale at Midwest Marine Boats. Become a boater and get a free Yeti cooler or Old Town kayak, plus $1,000 in in-store credit free with your new boat, and no payments for 90 days. Midwest Marine Boats has the best brands, including Bennington, Crownline, Sea Arc, and Vexus. But hurry, the special offer ends on July 4th. Get out to Midwest Marine Boats in Grandview at 13800 South Highway 71. Midwest Marine Boats, we take pride in your fun.
Paid for client portrayal and endorsement. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Every day, my firm helps people who have been injured in car wrecks. Just listen to this story.
I was going through an intersection and this guy ran a red light and T-boned me. Was going so fast, even though it clearly wasn't my fault, the insurance company was giving me a hard time. So I called Mike.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're world World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike's got this.
Call me. I've got this.
Call 816-888-7500.
Summer's officially here, and for the next few months, you're going to want to look and feel your best if you're spending time outside. In fact, you want to look and feel your best all year round. And I'm happy to say for the first time in years, I look and feel great. Hey, it's Bob Fesco, but I wasn't looking and feeling great a year ago. I was sluggish and was carrying around extra weight. So I stopped by supplement superstores and told them I wanted to lose 10 to 15 pounds. I'm now down over 30 pounds and had to have 3 inches taken off of my suit pants. Since that November day when I walked into the Ward Parkway location of supplement superstores, I've dropped weight, improved my workouts, and have more energy now than ever before. I'm using the Flashpoint Complex. It's a refreshing drink in the morning when I wake up that gives me sustained energy all day long without the jitters. Then right before bed, I have another refreshing drink and it helps me sleep and recover from the day. Stop into any of the 8 Kansas City area supplement superstores and tell them I sent you. They'll get you 20% off the Flashpoint Complex. Supplement superstores when you're ready to feel your best.
Hey guys, today I want to talk to you about Dan Dan the Wedding Man. Why rent a suit or tux when you could buy one from Dan Dan? Only $250 gets you a custom tailor suit or tux. And as always, Dan Dan has free alterations for life. It's the day your partner will remember for a lifetime, and it's a suit you can use for a lifetime. Best day, best look with Dan Dan the Wedding Man at 97th and Quivira, online at dandantheweddingman.com or call 541-1192.
When people have a craving to explore new and traditional Asian cuisines, they head to P.F. Chang's, where scratch-made dishes come from the 2,000-year-old tradition of wok cooking.
After Hours continues here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens, Chris Unucero producing the show. Real quick, before we get to Xavier Worthy, I'm going to tell you in just a few minutes why he is essential to the overall success of the wide receiver room. I know he's just a rookie, and I know Andy doesn't typically play rookies, but he can be really important for the overall success and the effectiveness of the wide receiver room and the offense this upcoming season. There are new rules that are coming out for the Home Run Derby, as if it wasn't, you know, complicated enough with all the other things that go into the bracket and this and that and the other. Salvi once was eliminated while he had the second most home runs in the first round. That's not going to happen this time. There's a frantic pace, concerns some participants. Each hitter is going to see a max of 40 pitches, similar to how there's a max number of shots in the NBA three-point contest. It puts a greater premium on efficiency instead of just going up there and taking as many hacks as you possibly can in a specific time range. The 3 minutes in the first two rounds and then 2 minutes in the championship round. The bonus time is not going to be clocked. The hitter's going to continue until he's made three outs. I like that aspect of it. Go. If you got momentum, keep on going. It makes it more exciting for people to watch, like when Josh Hamilton just wouldn't stop hitting home runs and it's just over and over and over again. It's more fun to watch that. I don't know if this is anything that sells me more on watching the Home Run Derby at all, but I like watching the Home Run Derby anyways. I think it's efficient, it's condensed, it's enjoyable to watch. I just wish that, you know, there's some aspects to it that are a little complicated that I don't know if they're necessarily needed, but that goes along with everything with the dunk contest and all the other stuff that goes on with other All-Star festivities.
I think we just have to acknowledge in 2024 that the All-Star format for sports is outdated. And it's like we shouldn't be thinking too
hard. It's a tough conversation, but yeah.
Because like you, the Pro Bowl can't be played the same way because there's too much money on the line.
Right.
NBA All-Star game definitely can't be played the same way because it happens in the middle of the season. And these teams are much more interested in trying to win a championship than they are having their players go out there and play the best ball that they can in this All-Star game. And I think at this point, I mean, the only sport I think you really get like guys trying to play well is baseball. And it the baseball All-Star game doesn't draw the way that it used to in terms of interest and ratings and whatnot. And I think we just have to acknowledge that this is a part of the sports calendar, part of the sports culture. It's a bit outdated. And so it's like at this point now, I don't think there's any changes that could be made to any of the contests that's going to like draw a ton more interest.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a fun little sideshow that we have in the middle of the season as a way for these guys to get a break and, you know, celebrate being recognized for being great that year. And that's that. But like, I mean, this is the reason why I stopped like tripping about the Pro Bowls that players that should get in don't get into. Because it's like it's all about fan voting and there's a lot of knowledge that these people don't have. And so we have to understand that this is just a very imperfect format for sports entertainment.
Yeah, Bobby Witt Jr. is still, I think, outpaced right now by Gunnar Henderson to be the starting shortstop. And for if I was confusing at all, I think I was a little bit. The way that the first rounds are going to work, there's eight batters. The top four advance by home runs. There's no bracket style. That's what happens in the semifinals where four plays against, or the one seed plays against the four, two and three, and you go on from there. 913-586-7610. This is After Hours here on 610 Sports Radio. How important is Xavier Worthy to the overall success of the wide receiver room? His over under, I was a little bit surprised that this is 750.5. I don't know if that's gone down since last week, but
what was it like? Did it open at like 825 or 850 or something?
That's what
like that?
It was. It opened at 825, which is an insane mark. Not only for a rookie overall, but for an Andy Reid styled rookie. I think that you might say, well, you know, if Xavier Worthy is going to be the overall success to the wide receiver room, how is that going to be the case? I think Rashee Rice does end up getting suspended this year. We don't really know, but I think that that's where it seems to be headed. Not just with the projections and everything like that, but the expectations for Hollywood Brown are high. Xavier Worthy, I think, though, is the key to how good the offense can be. You talk about 4-1s or 4-4-2 speed. 4-1 would be great. 4-2 speed. When Rashee's out, Hollywood Brown will be the guy. You get Travis Kelce. Xavier Worthy can be the thing that really unlocks, the guy that really unlocks the potential for the offense. You hear Patrick Mahomes and you hear Andy Reid earlier this summer talk about pushing the ball down the field more. Andy's challenging Patrick Mahomes to push it down further, try to get back to the offense when they had Tyreek Hill and make things a little bit more electrifying. Hollywood Brown is fast, and he's able to do a whole lot more than just be a fast guy. Xavier Worthy is the player to me that I know Andy doesn't typically like to play rookies early on, Chris, but I think if Rashee is suspended, you almost have to play a guy with that electrifying speed, and you don't even have to make it complicated for him. Just get him the ball. Do bubble screens. Get him the ball in any way, shape, or form that he can be an effective player, because with that sort of speed, he's a guy that can unlock the potential for the offense to draw attention away from guys like Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice when he is playing, Hollywood Brown, et cetera. You just go down the line of the potential for the offense is so much more, I think, when Xavier Worthy is the guy that is getting the ball more often than not. And not to say there's more pressure, but look, he's a first-round wide receiver. I think that there's the expectation he should be playing and be the number one or be the number three wide receiver without a doubt by the time we get to the halfway point of the season. I don't know if that's too high expectation for me, but that's what it is.
I think you should probably be looking what Tyreek Hill was in 2016, what Mecole Hardman was in 2019, where it's like he's a 600 plus receiving yard player and he's going to get a lot of like scripted touches, a lot of gadget plays, jet sweep motions, bubble screens, things like that. I don't think the Chiefs are going to try to force him into a prominent role, even if Rashee's out. Like, they still got like a decent stable of receivers that you can trust to kind of do like this rotation with that other receiving option, other receiving spot aside from where Hollywood is. I think we're going to see a lot of like 12 and 13 personnel from the Chiefs this year. So a lot of tight end play. I think Jared Wiley, he looked really good at mandatory minicamp. So I think that's going to mean that he could get some more playing time. He could get a few passes. He could kind of get the same kind of usage that like Jody Fortson had in 22 for the team. Okay. I'm as much as I think that Worthy will be able to come in and have an impact immediately, I don't want people to assume he's going to do what Rashee Rice did last year. Because Rashee, what he did was really unlikely, really improbable. It was mainly just because first off, he is a little bit more of a Sammy Watkins type. He's not the speedster going to break down the field. And that made it easier because other people were going to get the attention of the defense more than him, because we know the trope with Andy and rookie receivers. I kind of feel like Worthy could benefit from attention going to Hollywood, attention going to Kelsey and whatnot. But this is still a very difficult system for guys to learn. And I don't want to assume just because we saw one guy do it that another guy will just immediately come in and be a big contributor. So I kind of feel like they'll definitely use his athleticism, his speed, his quickness, just because you're going to be able to immediately translate that to the league. But as far as him being like an every down receiver, I wouldn't bet on that this year. That's something I would look for in 25.
Yeah, I think that the idea that he can be Rashee Rice in terms of the production is unrealistic, because Rashee was almost forced into that role. You know, he was not going to have the role that he had last year or be as productive, I guess, in that case. But they felt at week 10 of the season, you know what, this is the guy that consistently is doing stuff for us, and we have to play him because we have no other choice.
I mean, really, after the first month, they were like that.
Everybody was calling for it, yeah. It was needed after the Kadarius Toney bobbles. Sky Moore couldn't get open. He was getting cardio. MVS couldn't get it done. That is why I think I'd love to see Xavier Worthy more. But to your point, they don't have to make it complicated for him. Find a way to make him effective without making it too overbearing, I guess, on him to learn the playbook. And it seems like he's done a really good job, even though he hasn't been practicing ever since the hamstring strain. He's trying to make sure that gets right. He's been asking questions. He's been fully involved with going down to Camp Pat and learning stuff from Patrick Mahomes, talking to Hollywood Brown. I mean, if he can stay healthy, which, again, I hate posing that question, but it always is the caveat with a bunch of different sports, and in particular for football, whether it be college or whether it be pro. If Hollywood Brown can stay healthy, I think he's going to have a role where we're going to see some deep shots taken. We're going to see the bubble screen taken, where you just get the ball in the guy's hands. I mean, I think Andy is going to have him as the punt returner. Did a great job at Texas with that. He's got that electrifying speed that he can make things happen a la, you know, Sky Moore punt return, Kadarius Toney punt return. He can do that on a more, I think, reliable basis. This is After Hours on 610 Sports Radio. When we come back, who's the most likely breakout player for the Chiefs this year? I'll tell you why next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
After Hours continuing here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Chris Unocero on the other side of the glass. Who is the most likely breakout player for the Chiefs this year? There's a couple of nominations that I think can be players to watch going into the season. And, you know, a couple of them are on defense. One of them is on offense. I'm going to pose the question to you too, Chris, in a second. I think Leo Chanel is a candidate to have a breakout season. Had more of a role as each playoff game continued. 36% of the snaps in the Super Bowl. A guy that, you know,
we talking returning player or player that is, or can we include new players on the team?
You can include new players on the team if you want to. I think that there's, we might get to the player a little bit later who you're going to talk about, but that's fine. Breakout player for the Chiefs this year. I'm going to say Leo Chanel, I think, is the guy that breaks out more. Maybe part of the reason why Nick Bolton's like, look, I'm going to play this year out. I'm not going to sign a deal. Maybe because the team doesn't necessarily want to commit yet to paying Nick Bolton. Drew Tranquil obviously was fantastic. Leo Chanel, shout out to Wisconsin. For those of you who listen to Cody and Gold, I'm a Wisconsin guy. Leo has done a really nice job of stepping up to the billing. I think cornerback two is maybe the most important position to be filled on defense. Joshua Williams is a candidate. Arrowhead Pride had mentioned that in one of the recent articles. Moving on from L'Jarius Sneed, Williams has the potential to be that guy who's the cover corner in the man-heavy scheme that Spags likes to run. Spags likes Joshua Williams. I think those two are candidates on defense. Maybe Hollywood as well, if you want to go for an offensive guy. Chris, what are you thinking in terms of tabbing a guy that you think could be the breakout player for the Chiefs this upcoming season?
So on the offensive end, I'm going to go Hollywood, because I think Hollywood having this quarterback throwing to him.
Just explode, yeah.
Having the other weapons around him and the usage that Andy Reid has. Because, like, I mean, look, the way that they're going to use Hollywood is going to look very similar to the way that the Chiefs use Tyreek Hill. They're going to put him in a lot of motion. They're going to get him out in space. They're going to get the ball in his hands, and he's going to be able to run after the catch a lot. And that's what they did a lot with Tyreek, especially in 21 when teams started dropping those safeties back. They're like, okay, we're going to have him run a lot of orbit motion, get the ball in short yardage, in you know, space, short, you know, just barely beyond the line of scrimmage, let him run. And I imagine that's what they're going to do a lot of with him to open things up because, you know, if he does a really good job early on in the season, getting those yards after the catch, and he's able to, you know, make a couple of guys miss tackles and get a lot of yardage there, they're going to move their defensive backs up, and that's going to open things up down the field. And that's where I think Hollywood's really going to shine.
I think I know who you're going to say on defense.
Who?
Jaden Hicks.
I want to. Okay. I really want to. He's my number two option there. But the guy I actually think will have a great opportunity this year is going to be Shamari Connor. Mm. He is, I mean, he's a Snead clone in most of the aspects of what Snead did great. I do not think he's a shadow corner or anything. I mean, this is a hybrid corner safety type player. But everything that Snead was doing early in his career, playing in the slot, blitzing, coming up and making tackles in the run game, Connor can do that. When he was at Virginia Tech, that was what his game was. And I think when you look at what he's going to be able to do this year, there's a good chance that he's going to play a lot of slot corner. There's a good chance that he ends up playing so much inside that they don't have to worry about having Trent play in the slot nearly as much as they have in the past. Maybe Trent McDuffie ends up being the shadow corner. And that would be great because then you're in a situation where you can still kind of play the same style you did last year. But I think Connor did. He showed a lot late in the season last year when they had the injury with Brian Cook. Mm. And I think Connor is in a point now where he's a smart kid. He's incredibly athletically gifted, and he's more than willing to go out there and put a hat on a player. And I think in today's NFL, where all these teams are trying to throw it short and make defenders come up and tackle, he's a guy that gives you a real big opportunity to be able to continue to play the style that you did last year as much as you can. So if there is a breakout player, I really love Jaden Hicks. And of the rookie players, he is absolutely a guy I would look at more than just short of like an Xavier Worthy. I would say Jaden Hicks as far as rookies go. Yeah. But for guys, you know, if we're doing totality of the team, though, I think Shamari Connor's right there.
I think whoever fills that number two corner spot is the guy that is most likely on the defensive side from the secondary in particular, whether it's Shamari, whether it's Williams, whether it's
Jalen Watson. Well, I think he'd be more of a third corner, like a slot corner type.
Being able to those spags, you know, those blitzes, you know, the guy that can come up and make those tackles, a guy that can really stand out from that side of things, I think. I mean, it's a good problem to have.
Almost like a pseudo linebacker. The one thing I will say, though, and the thing that does kind of concern me about Leo Chanel is that he's not really someone you want in pass coverage. He's great against the run.
Run guy.
He's excellent against the run. Like a lot of times they would line him up as almost like a fifth lineman in those run packages. But the issue is you watch him in pass coverage and it's just unless he's blitzing, he's not that guy. And I would love to see him take the kind of step that like Nick Bolton did from year one to year two as a coverage linebacker.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to bet on it. And especially because I think that was one of the big motivations that the team had for re-signing Drew Tranquil is wanted someone who was going to be a little bit more trustworthy as a coverage linebacker, and Drew's going to give you that more than Leo Chanel is right now.
Thrived, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I mean, you could say for Drew Tranquil from the 816, the tackle we drafted, that'd be Kingsley Suomataia. Yeah, I think we're going to get to the rookies a little bit later on in the next hour. I actually, smack dab in the middle. We're going to dive into the rookie expectations, including Kingsley, including Jaden Hicks. We're going to talk about those guys as well. It really is it's a good problem to have, I think, when you've got so many guys that you could list as the breakout players, and it's not guys that you drafted. It's guys that have been, you know, not necessarily draft and stash
guys
players,
that you drafted, or, you know, like some of these guys are guys that they drafted like a year or two ago.
Yeah, I don't want to call them draft and stash, but they're guys that are in the third round, fourth round, fifth round, where Brevic just is hitting home runs, it seems like, in that window, you know, being able to get guys that he knows Spags can develop properly. And Spags has obviously done a great job where you feel encouraged that it can be. It would have been nice maybe to get an extra a guy from free agency maybe at the corner spot, but them not doing it, I think, shows you how much trust they have. And whoever is going to be 2 and 3, they have the belief that they're sitting in the roster right now. They didn't have to go out and get anybody because they have trust in the guys who they drafted in that third, fourth, and fifth round and in that specific window. I'm a college football guy, 249 miles of football podcast. You can catch on the Odyssey app, anywhere you get your podcast. We're going to talk about the end of the Power 5 era as it was. That becomes official today. What it means for the locals, KU, K-State, and Missouri on the other side. This is After Hours on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Welcome back to After Hours, 610 Sports Radio. Before we wrap up the first hour of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the end of the Power 5 era of college football as we know it. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Chris Unicero on the other side of the glass. Realignment becoming official as of today for Oklahoma and Texas as they move on to the SEC. That also means that they leave the Big 12. The official move for the schools leaving the Pac-12 going to the Big 10 doesn't technically happen until August, but the movement to the Big 12 includes Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado, solidifying the Big 12 as, I think collectively, I would say the third best conference in college sports among the ACC, SEC, and Big 10.
I mean, we'll see what happens with Florida State and Clemson, but yeah, they're definitely competing there.
Well, I think the big thing for them, I mean, what does it mean for KU and K-State? I'll get to them in particular in regards to what it means for them as programs, I guess, with football and basketball. But as a whole, KU and K-State are in a situation that isn't going to die, I don't think, anytime soon necessarily, because the next one on the chopping block, I would say, is the ACC for the reason that you brought up, Chris, is that, you know, FSU has wanted out for the last year from the ACC or two even. Clemson is going to be a team that also wants to move. Miami, likely. It seems like the ACC will be the next conference to shatter like the Pac-12 has, even though the Pac-12 is still keeping its name for whatever reason with Oregon State and Washington State. For the program specific stuff regarding college football this year, for KU and K-State, the departure of Texas and Oklahoma means that you got the best chance that you've had in maybe ever to win the conference. I mean, we could see a KU and K-State Big 12 title game. We know they're going to play during the regular season. This is the best chance that KU is going to have maybe for a little while now with Jalen Daniels, as long as he can stay healthy. Obviously, that's the caveat. But they've got a schedule that is fitting enough where they could potentially be playing in a Big 12 title game. K-State, obviously, with Avery Johnson. They bring in Dylan Edwards from Colorado amidst some other moves in the portal to shore up the offensive line. It's the best chance for them to go ahead and win a conference title. And obviously with that now, Chris, is you get that automatic bid into the college football playoff. So the expansion of the playoff along with realignment has really positioned KU and K-State to have the most success that they can, particularly this year when you look at some of the other schools that they could be competing against. Arizona, really good. New head coach, obviously. Jed Fish goes on to Washington. Some questions there. Iowa State could be competitive too, but KU, K-State, and Utah seem to be the big three at the top of the Big 12. And then you got a bevy of other teams that are right behind them in terms of where the projections sit at for those two schools.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's wide open.
It is.
And I think there could be some attrition there. Like, I understand there's certainly some confidence coming from K-State fans. I know a lot of them, and they really like the Avery Johnson kid. But college football's really difficult. And you don't always see those jumps from year to year, especially when it comes to like quarterbacks and whatnot. So
yeah, but the portal and all that other stuff too.
Right, and the portal helps and whatnot. But like,
it's very difficult to build a team off the portal and immediately you're having success. You got to have some building block players that got experience in order to be able to kind of establish yourself in that position. So I kind of think that the Big 12 is pretty wide open. I know that I think Colorado's a bit overrated. I think a lot of people are getting ahead of themselves on it.
I agree.
But they got talent, man. Shedeur Sanders could be a first round quarterback. Travis Hunter could end up being the top receiver taking this draft class. I kind of think it's going to be Luther Burden, but you know, there's going to be games to be played and Travis is going to have an opportunity to earn that spot. But I really think that this conference is very wide open.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm feeling like it, like for sure. I feel like a lot of people are saying Kansas and Kansas State because of familiarity, but there's a lot of good programs
Oklahoma
out there.
Oklahoma State, yeah.
Oklahoma, I mean, Oklahoma State got one of the best running backs in the country in Ollie Gordon, man. And they definitely showed last year that they could compete with some of the top teams. They just couldn't do it like at that consistent level that a powerhouse would. But there's good teams in this conference. So I just feel like right now, the Big 12 has a lot of unanswered questions now that you have this power vacuum without Texas and Oklahoma. And I don't know if we're going to have any answers on who really is going to step up and become the next Texas, become the next Oklahoma, really anytime soon. I think it's going to take a few years for someone to really kind of seize that spot as like the class of the conference.
I think that's a good, I don't know if there ever will be. And I think that's a good thing because you'll have, you know, not that they're going to be as talented as the SEC, but you're going to have the teams that are maybe the cream of the crop, but you have others that can still compete and potentially get themselves into a situation where you go to Dallas. I mean, on the podcast, again, 249 Miles of Football podcast, I talked about this a little bit. K-State has got a little bit more difficult schedule than KU. They might have a better overall roster, if you want to go as far as to say that, but this is the best chance that KU has. If Jalen Daniels is healthy, they have the best shot at winning the conference. They have a better shot than K-State does because the way that the schedule pans out for KU, the hardest game that they have on the calendar is probably at K-State. They have Iowa State at home. They have West Virginia on the road as well. I mean, those are the three toughest games you probably have, and the two of them are on the road. But if KU can find themselves undefeated against K-State, They're in the realm of getting to the Big 12 title game. K-State have the talent, but I mean they have to go through Oklahoma State, they have to go through Arizona, they also have to play Tulane on the road in a non-con. I mean the Big 12
and Tulane's a good program.
Yeah, they are. And John Summerall comes over from Troy, where he had a lot of success as well. KU, K-State have the best chance that they have to win the conference, along with the realignment as far as the effectiveness and what it means for those two programs, which is obviously good for both KU and K-State. For Missouri, what does it mean now that Texas and Oklahoma are coming into the conference? Well, for this year, it means only a little bit for Missouri because they play Oklahoma, and that's one of the tougher games that they have. But going forward, it's going to be even tougher than it was before for Missouri to make an SEC title game, to win the SEC. I mean, heaven forbid they've never done that. We'll have to see if they can ever get back to that game. But this is the year for Missouri where they have to get it done, and you could argue there's maybe even more expectation for Elijah Drinkwitz, and maybe even more pressure on the Missouri program. But they're in the catbird seat from the standpoint of revenue and from sticking around the longest, and they're in the spot that they need to be. And I know everybody loves to look back and say, well, we loved it when it was the Big 8, and we loved it when it was the old Big 12, and Mizzou was in there with KU and K-State. And as good as that is, that's not the way that it is now. I think that we're long beyond the reminiscing of the old Big 12 or the old Big 10 or the Big East and the Southwest Conference and all that other stuff. You still get the rivalry games, but you have to embrace the fact that college sports is a business. And in that conversation, what are the biggest money makers? The SEC and the Big 10. And Missouri finds themselves in the SEC. If they were offered a shot to go and join up again with the Big 12, they would say absolutely not. There's no reason for them to leave. So with realignment, it's only going to help them financially. But I think from a competition standpoint, it's going to make it a little bit tougher for Missouri. But again, they don't play Texas this year, which helps. Their toughest games are Oklahoma, Alabama, and Texas A&M. I mean, I think given that they're also in the SEC, Chris, this also helps. There's not as much wiggle room for KU and K-State, where if they have two losses, they're making the playoff unless they win the conference, where if you're Missouri, you don't even have to win. You don't even have to make the conference title game, and you're going to get the nod because you are in the Southeastern Conference.
I disagree with that.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason why is because I don't think people look at Mizzou the same they would look at an Alabama,
I agree,
LSU,
but they would have
Florida,
made it last year.
Georgia. Like, they would have made it last year, but like, if we're talking about like a two-loss team, I don't think they get in. I think there's other programs out there that get in ahead of them, because we already know there's always like a few teams out there. Like, unless we're talking about like Mizzou has a great resume, they've beaten some really good teams, but they lost a couple of games, maybe at that point. But like, I don't feel like Mizzou, because they don't have that history of being one of those top programs year in, year out. They've had some years where they've been really competitive in the SEC, made it to the title game, but they haven't had any years where like we really looked at them as like a real contender. Even last year, which is probably the best year they've had since, what, 08? Even that year, like, you knew like they were going to get some losses and they were going to fall just short just because there's other teams that are more talented than them. And so, I mean, Mizzou really kind of had, they got a lot of talent. Obviously, you know, the new quarterback that they've gotten, you know, who really, you know, broke out last year,
Brady Cook.
Yep. Yeah. He's someone that is going to get a lot of buzz going into the air. Luther Burden, maybe the top receiver in this draft class. I think he is. He's going to be someone to look out for. But you look at this Mizzou team, and I mean, this will be obviously the time where like the 2022 recruiting class will start to bear some of that fruit. But at the same time, you're talking about a class that like wasn't top 10, wasn't top 5. I mean, I think they were what, 15 or 17 in the country, which is really good, but it's not one of those elite classes. And if you, and I know this is a Florida fan, because I've seen them do a lot of 15 ranked classes and then you still get three losses during the regular season. It's just a different monster getting to the top of that conference. I kind of feel like at the current way that they are recruiting, they probably would have been better off in the Big 12 just because you got a better chance of locking up that automatic bid. And I think to me nowadays, that's going to be more important than being in the SEC. Like Texas and Oklahoma getting, like if you stay in the Big 12, you get auto bids, like you know you're getting in. We just saw an undefeated Florida State team not get in because there's no auto bids there. To me, the auto bid is way more important now than it is to, you know, just be good enough that a committee will decide you're one of the four best teams, or in this case now 12 best teams.
Well,
shoot for the auto bid.
Okay. I'm with you. They would have gotten in had they had the quarterback.
Right.
Had Jordan Travis been in, they would have made.
Or if there would have been automatic bids, like they totally would have gotten in.
Right.
That point.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I think that 913-586-7610. Someone from the 816 said 2013 Mizzou was a game away from the national title.
Yeah, and then they were not going there. They were going to win the game.
they lost. Final poll for them was fifth after they won the bowl game. They ended up ninth after the SEC game. I think that's, look, there's an argument there. I don't know if that actually would have happened because, again, that was pre-college football playoff. Somebody else said they literally lost two games last year and were eighth. They don't like you on the text line, Chris.
That's fine. I don't care.
Look,
if you want to put your Mizzou hat on, defend them, cool.
To your point, though, real quick, before we go to break, you have a point where if they do have two losses, given how light the schedule is this year, the committee might be like, you know what? They had an easy schedule and they still had two losses. Maybe that's reasoning to not include them, actually, in the college football playoff.
Like with the 12,
we'll have to see.
With the 12, like, Mizzou has a much better chance of getting
right
in like now.
Correct. And I think them being, that's why I say them being in the SEC provides them that opportunity. Big 12 is such a bloodbath that I don't know. There might be better odds for you to bet on KU or K-State winning the conference than getting their over-under. Because you might have a 9-3 team. They go, K-State might go under their 9.5, but they still might win the conference and make the playoff because no other team is going to make it because everybody's going to be knocking each other out. That's why the Big 12 might be the most competitive conference in the country.
Yeah,
in all seriousness.
With the level of talent, though, that like Mizzou has right now, because Drinkwitz has recruited pretty well recently.
This is the best chance that they have.
Like, if they were in the Big 12, the chances of them getting into the tournament are just so much higher.
Just because they win the conference?
Yeah, because I think they win the conference. Because they're it's a really talented team. I just think, like, to me, when you're in the SEC, if you're Mizzou, you're fighting an uphill battle against teams that have more money than you, that have been more successful than you, and they have an in with a lot of these recruits that you're just starting to get. And I think that if you're in Mizzou's shoes, like if I were a Mizzou fan, I would wish, like, man, it'd be nice to be in the Big 12 right now. Don't have to worry about Texas. Don't have to worry about Oklahoma. Like, we could be the Texas or the Oklahoma of this Big 12 now. And
yeah,
and if you disagree, I get it. I'm a Florida fan. I love being in the SEC. It's great. But being the SEC, I don't think is going to benefit teams nearly as much now as it did in the previous era where we had, like, the BCS, where we had the four-team college football playoff.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Schools leaving the Pac-12 going to the Big Ten doesn't technically happen until August, but the movement to the Big 12 includes Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado, solidifying the Big 12 as, I think collectively, I would say the third best conference in college sports among the ACC, SEC, and Big Ten.
I mean, we'll see what happens with Florida State and Clemson, but yeah, they're definitely competing there.
Well, I think the big thing for them, I mean, what does it mean for KU and K-State? I'll get to them in particular in regards to what it means for them as programs, I guess, with football and basketball. But as a whole, KU and K-State are in a situation that isn't going to die, I don't think, anytime soon necessarily, because the next one on the chopping block, I would say, is the ACC for the reason that you brought up, Chris, is that, you know, FSU has wanted out for the last year from the ACC or two even. Clemson is going to be a team that also wants to move. Miami, likely. It seems like the ACC will be the next conference to shatter like the Pac-12 has, even though the Pac-12 is still keeping its name for whatever reason with Oregon State and Washington State. For the program-specific stuff regarding college football this year, for KU and K-State, the departure of Texas and Oklahoma means that you got the best chance that you've had in maybe ever to win the conference. I mean, we could see a KU and K-State Big 12 title game. We know they're going to play during the regular season. This is the best chance that KU is going to have maybe for a little while now with Jalen Daniels, as long as he can stay healthy. Obviously, that's the caveat. But they've got a schedule that is fitting enough where they could potentially be playing in a Big 12 title game. K-State, obviously, with Avery Johnson. They bring in Dylan Edwards from Colorado amidst some other moves in the portal to shore up the offensive line. It's the best chance for them to go ahead and win a conference title. And obviously with that now, Chris, is you get that automatic bid into the college football playoff. So the expansion of the playoff along with realignment has really positioned KU and K-State to have the most success that they can, particularly this year when you look at some of the other schools that they could be competing against. Arizona, really good. New head coach, obviously. Jed Fish goes on to Washington. Some questions there. Iowa State could be competitive too, but KU, K-State, and Utah seem to be the big three at the top of the Big 12, and then you got a bevy of other teams that are right behind them in terms of where the projections sit at for those two schools.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's wide open.
It is.
And I think there could be some attrition there. Like, I understand there's certainly some confidence coming from K-State fans. I know a lot of them, and they really like the Avery Johnson kid. But college football is really difficult. And you don't always see those jumps from year to year, especially when it comes to like quarterbacks and whatnot. So
yeah, but the portal and all that other stuff too.
Right, and the portal helps and whatnot, but like it's very difficult to build a team off the portal and immediately you're having success. You got to have some building block players that got experience in order to be able to kind of establish yourself in that position. So I kind of think that the Big 12 is pretty wide open. I know that I think Colorado's a bit overrated. I think a lot of people are getting ahead of themselves on it.
I agree.
But they got talent, man. Shedeur Sanders could be a first round quarterback. Travis Hunter could end up being the top receiver taking this draft class. I kind of think it's going to be Luther Burden, but you know, there's going to be games to be played and Travis is going to have an opportunity to earn that spot. But I really think that this conference is very wide open.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm feeling like it, like for sure. I feel like a lot of people are saying Kansas and Kansas State because of familiarity, but there's a lot of good programs
Oklahoma
out there.
Oklahoma State, yeah.
Oklahoma, I mean, Oklahoma State got Ollie one Gordon. Of the best running backs in the country in Ollie Gordon, man. And they definitely showed last year that they could compete with some of the top teams. They just couldn't do it like at that consistent level that a powerhouse would. But there's good teams in this conference. So I just feel like right now, the Big 12 has a lot of unanswered questions now that you have this power vacuum without Texas and Oklahoma. And I don't know if we're going to have any answers on who really is going to step up and become the next Texas, become the next Oklahoma, really anytime soon. I think it's going to take a few years for someone to really kind of seize that spot as like the class of the conference.
I think that's a good, I don't know if there ever will be. And I think that's a good thing because you'll have, you know, not that they're going to be as talented as the SEC, but you're going to have the teams that are maybe the cream of the crop, but you have others that can still compete and potentially get themselves into a situation where you go to Dallas. I mean, on the podcast, again, 249 Miles of Football podcast, I talked about this a little bit. K-State has got a little bit more difficult schedule than KU. They might have a better overall roster if you want to go as far as to say that, but this is the best chance that KU has. If Jalen Daniels is healthy, they have the best shot at winning the conference. They have a better shot than K-State does because the way that the schedule pans out for KU, the hardest game that they have on the calendar is probably at K-State. They have Iowa State at home. They have West Virginia on the road as well. I mean, those are the three toughest games you probably have, and the two of them are on the road. But if KU can find themselves undefeated against K-State, They're in the realm of getting to the Big 12 title game. K-State have the talent, but I mean they have to go through Oklahoma State, they have to go through Arizona, they also have to play Tulane on the road in a non-con. I mean the Big 12
and Tulane's a good program.
Yeah, they are. And John Summerall comes over from Troy, where he had a lot of success as well. KU, K-State have the best chance that they have to win the conference, along with the realignment as far as the effectiveness and what it means for those two programs, which is obviously good for both KU and K-State. For Missouri, what does it mean now that Texas and Oklahoma are coming into the conference? Well, for this year, it means only a little bit for Missouri because they play Oklahoma, and that's one of the tougher games that they have. But going forward, it's going to be even tougher than it was before for Missouri to make an SEC title game, to win the SEC. I mean, heaven forbid they've never done that. We'll have to see if they can ever get back to that game. But this is the year for Missouri where they have to get it done, and you could argue there's maybe even more expectation for Elijah Drinkwitz, and maybe even more pressure on the Missouri program. But they're in the catbird seat from the standpoint of revenue and from sticking around the longest, and they're in the spot that they need to be. And I know everybody loves to look back and say, well, we loved it when it was the Big 8, and we loved it when it was the old Big 12, and Mizzou was in there with KU and K-State. And as good as that is, that's not the way that it is now. I think that we're long beyond the reminiscing of the old Big 12 or the old Big 10 or the Big East and the Southwest Conference and all that other stuff. You still get the rivalry games, but you have to embrace the fact that college sports is a business. And in that conversation, what are the biggest money makers? The SEC and the Big 10. And Missouri finds themselves in the SEC. If they were offered a shot to go and join up again with the Big 12, they would say absolutely not. There's no reason for them to leave. So with realignment, it's only going to help them financially. But I think from a competition standpoint, it's going to make it a little bit tougher for Missouri. But again, they don't play Texas this year, which helps. Their toughest games are Oklahoma, Alabama, and Texas A&M. I mean, I think given that they're also in the SEC, Chris, this also helps. there's not as much wiggle room for KU and K-State, where if they have two losses, they're making the playoff unless they win the conference. Where if you're Missouri, you don't even have to win. You don't even have to make the conference title game, and you're going to get the nod because you are in the Southeastern Conference.
I disagree with that.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason why is because I don't think people look at Mizzou the same they would look at an Alabama,
I agree,
LSU,
but they would have
Florida,
made it last year.
Georgia. Like, they would have made it last year, but like, if we're talking about like a two-loss team, I don't think they get in. I think there's other programs out there that get in ahead of them. Because we already know there's always like a few teams out there. Like, unless we're talking about like Mizzou has a great resume, they've beaten some really good teams, but they lost a couple of games, maybe at that point. But like, I don't feel like Mizzou, because they don't have that history of being one of those top programs year in, year out. They've had some years where they've been really competitive in the SEC, made it to the title game, but they haven't had any years where like we really looked at them as like a real contender. Even last year, which is probably the best year they've had since, what, 08? Even that year, like, you knew like they were going to get some losses and they were going to fall just short just because there's other teams that are more talented than them. And so, I mean, Mizzou really kind of had, they got a lot of talent. Obviously, you know, the new quarterback that they've gotten, you know, who really, you know, broke out last year,
Brady Cook.
Yep. Yeah. He's someone that is going to get a lot of buzz going into the air. Luther Burden, maybe the top receiver in this draft class. I think he is. He's going to be someone to look out for. But you look at this Mizzou team, and I mean, this will be obviously the time where like the 2022 recruiting class will start to bear some of that fruit. But at the same time, you're talking about a class that like wasn't top 10, wasn't top 5. I mean, I think they were what, 15 or 17 in the country, which is really good, but it's not one of those elite classes. And if you, and I know this is a Florida fan because I've seen them do a lot of 15 ranked classes and then you still get three losses during the regular season. It's just a different monster getting to the top of that conference. I kind of feel like at the current way that they are recruiting, they probably would have been better off in the Big 12 just because you got a better chance of locking up that automatic bid. And I think to me nowadays, that's going to be more important than being in the SEC. Like Texas and Oklahoma getting, like if you stay in the Big 12, you get auto bids, like you know you're getting in. We just saw an undefeated Florida State team not get in because there's no auto bids there. To me, the auto bid is way more important now than it is to, you know, just be good enough that a committee will decide you're one of the four best teams, or in this case now 12 best teams.
Well,
shoot for the auto bid.
Okay. I'm with you. They would have gotten in had they had the quarterback.
Right.
Had Jordan Travis been in, they would have made.
Or if there would have been automatic bids, like they totally would have gotten in.
Right.
That point.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I think that 913-586-7610. Someone from the 816 said 2013 Mizzou was a game away from the national title.
Yeah, and then they were not going there. They were going to win
the
game.
they lost. Final poll for them was fifth after they won the bowl game. They ended up ninth after the SEC game. I think that's, look, there's an argument there. I don't know if that actually would have happened because, again, that was pre-college football playoff. Somebody else said they literally lost two games last year and were eighth. They don't like you on the text line, Chris.
That's fine. I don't care.
Look,
if you want to put your Mizzou hat on, defend them, cool.
To your point, though, real quick, before we go to break, you have a point where if they do have two losses, given how light the schedule is this year, the committee might be like, you know what? They had an easy schedule and they still had two losses. Maybe that's reasoning to not include them, actually, in the college football playoff.
Like with the 12,
we'll have to see.
With the 12, like, Mizzou has a much better chance of getting
right.
in like now.
Correct. And I think them being, that's why I say them being in the SEC provides them that opportunity. Big 12 is such a bloodbath that I don't know. There might be better odds for you to bet on KU or K-State winning the conference than getting their over-under. Because you might have a 9-3 team. They go, K-State might go under their 9.5, but they still might win the conference and make the playoff because no other team is going to make it because everybody's going to be knocking each other out. That's why the Big 12 might be the most competitive conference in the country.
Yeah,
in all seriousness.
With the level of talent, though, that like Mizzou has right now, because Drinkwitz has recruited pretty well recently.
This is the best chance
recently,
that they have.
Like, if they were in the Big 12, the chances of them getting into the tournament are just so much higher.
Just because they win the conference?
Yeah, because I think they win the conference. Because they're it's a really talented team. I just think, like, to me, when you're in the SEC, if you're Mizzou, you're fighting an uphill battle against teams that have more money than you, that have been more successful than you, and they have an in with a lot of these recruits that you're just starting to get. And I think that if you're in Mizzou's shoes, like if I were a Mizzou fan, I would wish, like, man, it'd be nice to be in the Big 12 right now. Don't have to worry about Texas. Don't have to worry about Oklahoma. Like, we could be the Texas or the Oklahoma of this Big 12 now. And
yeah,
and if you disagree, I get it. I'm a Florida fan. I love being in the SEC. It's great. But being in the SEC, I don't think is going to benefit teams nearly as much now as it did in the previous era where we had like the BCS, where we had the 4-team college football playoff. I don't think it's going to be as beneficial now as it used to be.
Hold up. If Florida, you're a Florida guy. If Florida goes 10-2 this year, are they in the playoff?
It's a little sketchy. I mean, there's a good chance. There's a good chance, but if their losses are bad, they lose to like a Kentucky, then it's going to be a little dicey for them getting in there.
I am revisiting this conversation later on in the show now.
If it happens, I'd love it, but I mean, I'm not going to count on it. I'm not going to be mad if they don't make it in the top 12, because I understand
this wasn't even planned.
There's some good teams out there.
I am revisiving this because their schedule is a gauntlet. If they go 10-2,
it is a gauntlet.
They
go 10-2, they probably will, because it's a tough schedule. It's a real tough.
It's After Hours on 610 Sports Radio. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.